Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. New SkinGuard Sensitive Razor. The first razor of its kind designed to stop irritation on sensitive skin. Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Monday, the 9th of December.
And
what?
Come on, Ruby, just say it.
And it's 16 days to Christmas.
Yes, Ruby!
Coming up on Game On tonight, it was a great weekend for Irish athletics.
I'm so happy, very happy. That's my first race, you know? That's big race for me, big opportunity. I'm so happy. That's my first race. I'm doing good place, you know? That's... I'm so very happy.
We look back at the weekend's rugby with Stephen Ferris and Craig Doyle as Leinster dominate and Munster survive a late scare.
Jack O'Donoghue, a brilliant steal from him. Peter O'Mahony-esque at the front of the line-out, plucked at Saracen's throw. It saved the day because having had that win in the bag, it could have so easily turned.
And Manchester United further Liverpool's lead at the top of the Premier League.
They now find themselves 14 points behind Liverpool.
All that and much more between now and 8 o'clock. Text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM or send us a WhatsApp on 087 187 9200.
Game On. On 2FM.
Do you know what? I'm starting to love Mondays.
Why?
Because we're all together.
You know what? It's the first Monday I walked in and I didn't actually feel left out.
What do you mean, feel left out?
Well, usually I come in and the two of you like are having a right go at me, but I came in today and you two were fighting.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just kind of felt this is, you know, we're all on a level playing field for a change.
Well, I tell you what we were fighting at. See this?
I know. Tell us.
Ruby's photoed in most of the papers today. Ruby, you're back on the horse.
I was riding work after racing. That's not exactly... Well, I suppose it is back on a horse technically, but...
What does that mean?
I suppose it's a bit like a friendly match for footballers or something like that.
Yeah, because you'd be really good in a friendly match.
Yeah. Is it wrong to be jealous of a horse? You know what I mean? When I saw Ruby back with the horses, I was there, isn't he not having the crack with us, like?
No, I was in Punchestown riding Shaq and Poursois, who was a very good horse, and I was doing a bit of work for Willie Mullins.
Did you win your friendly?
Of course I did. I actually got slagged over that as well.
Who else was there? What other horses?
Paul Townend was riding Albion Photo, the Gold Cup winner. Patrick Mullins rode Kenboy, who's doing his best impression of Donegal Callaghan at the moment.
What does that mean?
Carrying a bit of extra weight. Oh, a bit more than he should.
You can't slag if it's true. We've chatted about this.
See, but you're the one that keeps going on about the diet and the diet, how good your diet is and your diet. You know
what
I mean?
I'm not saying my diet's good. It was very good. But now, like...
Now it's just a lot of food.
Yeah, it's a lot of food. Whereas...
So you should take hints from me about your diet.
You don't have a diet.
I do. Twice a day. Every day.
He just called you Kenboy.
I'll take it. I was asking him earlier on, does he know horses by their legs?
So up he puts on his iPad, right? He inflates this picture from a picture in the paper of a horse galloping somewhere at the weekend, but the horse's name is written under it. So he says to me, what's this one called? So I sit there and I couldn't stop laughing and I just called out the horse's name and he turns it around. It is. Gullible, or what?
You never answered the question.
What was the question?
Can you tell a horse by its legs?
No, you can't.
Do you know what I'm excited about as well? People can WhatsApp in from now on in. Isn't that great news?
How do we do that?
You just hold on WhatsApp your voice messages to 087 187 9200. So basically, rather than us calling out your highlights, we'd rather hear them for you because, to be fair, between the three of us, I think we lose all the emotion and the good crack. So... Bar you, Marie. Jeez, don't look at me like that.
I told you it's great to be in here today. These two are fighting like cats and dogs.
I'll tell you why I'm fighting, because I'm disappointed with Donica.
Go on.
For the last 2 months.
2 months.
We've been here talking about Dancing with the Stars. Oh. I thought he was going to be on it. I thought every Sunday, Ruby, yourself and myself, would be out in the studio watching him and his darker shade of fake tan, some glitter.
Sounds perfect.
Some lycra. And now it seems they have completed the lineup and you're not in it.
I'm disappointed with you because I told you the truth from the start. I was there, I'm not doing Dancing with the Stars, and you're there, yes, scallywag, where were you this morning?
That's because you kept turning up in shorts in the middle of winter. In all fairness, like, we were entitled to make some sort of assumption as to what you were at.
And you were getting browner by the day.
I was trying to go to the gym so that it didn't look like Ken Boy.
It didn't work.
So there's a Kilkenny hurler in Dancing with the Stars.
Woohoo!
Aidan Fogarty has joined the lineup. He has 8 All-Irelands. He said that he would take an All-Ireland final day over going to Dancing with the Stars any day because the nerves are so bad.
Do you think Brian Cody is going to go along, like, in the audience, like what you were hoping to do for us?
You could just see him getting up and walking out at half time, couldn't you? Disgusted.
No, I'd say we'd calling him in for a team talk, yeah, and saying you want to up your game.
What's going on with your steps on the Foxtrot? It's not good enough.
Marie, can we just stop talking about Dancing with the Stars?
It's over now.
It's over.
It is
well,
over.
No, it's just about to get going.
It is, but it won't be the same because you're not in it.
Yeah, what was your highlight, Donegal?
My highlight was Ireland's fittest family, the McSherrys. No, we're not having that.
I did watch it with my kids, and yes, that was great, but it was hardly the highlight, sporting highlight of the weekend.
I know, but can we give it some bit of airtime?
We give it airtime every second day.
Look, they get really happy with me if I plug the show. It's on 6:30 on Sundays.
You surely got your contract back for next year by now.
All I want is a proper pair of tracksuit pants, as you've seen.
Yeah, you keep wearing Darvelous.
And if he keeps getting bigger and the tracksuit pants stop the
it Marie, this is no bullying.
Where's HR?
Okay, moving on. Whose highlight is next? We haven't given you a proper highlight.
Yeah, bar the McSherrys and Phyllis family, to be fair,
I have to say it.
Yeah, it had to be. And look, it doesn't. Leinster was my highlight.
What did you say that was?
Leinster were my highlight.
Leinster rugby.
Yeah.
How many stars did they have?
Stop it, Marie. They didn't win Love Island like us, huh?
Or Fittest Family.
It's about all Munster going away.
Hey, Ruby, stop it. I'll get on over it. No, they were brilliant. I think the thing for me is everyone's, in typical fashion, everyone was chatting up Northampton, the top of the Premiership. And we're going to be chatting to Craig Doyle later on. We're also chatting to Stephen Ferris, who'll put more shape on it. But it was just a ruthless performance by Leinster. And unfortunate to see Johnny Sexton going off, but... other than that, it was a brilliant performance.
I think that you are slowly edging towards media now that you have admitted that Leinster was your highlight.
Giant step for Donegal.
What do you mean? I promise you, every part of me wanted to give it to Munster. Like, but that the 40 minutes I was there, and it was a dogfight of a game. It really was terrible conditions. I think Munster would be happy. Do you know who's probably the losers of the Irish provinces this weekend? Connacht, and I know they'd be disappointed to lose, but I was so surprised that they didn't pick up a losing bonus point at Gloucester. I think of all the provinces coming away from it, of course they'll all need to improve for next week, but I think Connacht could have shot themselves in the foot.
Don't think Leinster need to improve too much for next week.
No. Johnny Sexton could be injured though.
Yeah.
Out for a few weeks.
Ross Byrne was very good and he came on as well.
And always is. Yeah. I don't think Ross Byrne ever plays a bad game. Ruby, your highlight.
Ollie Gunnar Solskjaer, Man United. Beating City 2-1.
You can't do this.
Done a complete U-turn in a week.
Could producer Ronan please find the clip of last week when Ruby was saying he was sick of him and he wanted rid of him?
And not only that.
Then he went and beat Spurs, then he went and beat City, and Ollie Gunnar's an absolute hero all over again.
From zero to hero.
You actually managed to manipulate Alan Cawley as well. Like he lost all his punditry
credibility.
I didn't make him say what he said about Liverpool. He said that all of his own.
He had the big puppy dog eyes because he was sharing a mic with you. He was so happy.
But United were my highlight of the weekend. Marie.
It was a fantastic week of sport, weekend of sport, I have to say. There was all the rugby, there was the City United match, there was the
Fittest families
for Donica. There was so much going on, the NFL last night. But for me, the highlight was the athletics. And I love a good story, as you all know. Yeah. And Ephraim Giddy won the under-20 bronze medal at the European Cross Country Championships. And he has a fantastic story. Ian Reardon will be on later on to tell us a little bit about him because he has spoken to him a couple of times and just where he came from and what he's managed to achieve. So stay tuned because it really is fascinating.
Yeah,
and how he got to here. It is an incredible story.
Yeah.
But only 19 years of age, like, it's going to be a brilliant story going forward for us. And that's just so good. But we want to hear your highlights. You can text us them on 51552. You can tweet them at GameOn2FM, or you can give our WhatsApp go 087 187 9200. I'm mad keen for a WhatsApp.
How long is it going to take you to learn that number?
I Bearing in mind, I actually have to look my phone up to find Jenny's number, so there's a better chance of me knowing this one.
God, I wouldn't have admitted to that.
Don't worry.
Okay, so think Billy knows your number.
Yes. I hope he does anyway. Text me, Billy, and tell me if you know my number.
Do you know Jillian's number?
Yeah.
Throw it out there. No, I'm joking.
Okay, we're going to move on to athletics now because Ian O'Riordan joins us on the phone. Ian, we're going to get into all the success over the weekend and the good news stories, but we're going to start with what's going on Russia. We know they've been banned from major international sporting events for 4 years after being found guilty of manipulating lab doping data. Give us a background on this, Ian.
Yeah, well, coincidentally, Russia were not running in the European cross country yesterday because athletics is one of the few sports that actually stood up and said, "No, we're not standing for the whole Russia doping situation." You know, the decision that was made today, and I know we spoke about this a few weeks ago. This was the WADA executive committee basically recommending that Russia be banned across all sports for the next 4 years. This was unanimously agreed. Now they had no choice. I mean, this is essentially voting what they agreed for in advance. But as I said to you before, this is kind of like deja vu all over again. We were exactly the same position before the 2016 Olympics in Rio, and between the political maneuverings or whatever, lo and behold, Russia were back on board. But I'll give you another example. Actually, I was watching the European short course swimming championships over the weekend, and Russia topped the medal table there. I think it was 13 gold medals, 22 medals overall. So it'll have huge impact on the sport. Now, obviously, they're talking about Tokyo Olympics, the 2022 World Cup, but. As I say about history repeating itself, I think it's gone beyond the farce at this stage, but I definitely think it's the last we've heard of it. And if I was a betting man, which I am increasingly these days, I'd say we'll still see Russia in Tokyo next summer in some shape or form.
Well, we know they're going to be at the Euros, which is funny that they're still allowed to go there.
Yeah, that would seem to be somewhere lost in the small print, that for some reason UEFA doesn't qualify as an international federation or something. I still can't quite figure out why that is. But no, as of now, it doesn't impact on Russia, who, of course, are one of the host nations as well. But there's a long way to go yet. This is a recommendation which was agreed by WADA. But ultimately, what pulls the strings here are the International Olympic Committee and of course, FIFA when it comes to the World Cup. I mean, they ultimately can organise their own event. So it wouldn't be a slightest bit surprising if they fly in the face of what WADA recommends. And as I say, welcome Russia back. But look, it's a long way to go yet. But I think it's... at least WADA seem to be showing a little bit more backbone. Although don't forget, they were the ones who invited Russia back in the first place before the evidence was conclusive that they'd actually cleaned up their house and whatever. So as I say, it's history repeating itself, and it's gone beyond the farce at this stage.
Ian, how do soccer players get pushed in with athletes, I suppose? They were hardly part of the Russian youth training as well, were they?
Well, it depends. I mean, if you go back to, I mean, there's nothing new here. I mean, even I spoke to you before about that documentary, the Icarus documentary, which really revealed just how widespread it was in Russia, and that's why I used the word systematic. And I think when they found the evidence, it was across maybe up to 30 sports. So I'm saying all along that sometimes athletics gets a hard rap, and some maybe cycling as well. But certainly the evidence suggests otherwise. That this was widespread across all sports. We saw it in the Winter Olympics. And that's why I mentioned the swimming. This has implications as well on boxing in terms of boxing qualification for Tokyo, in terms of how that'll trickle down to the Irish. But I think I think it'd be a little bit naive to say, well, it was just the old kind of reliable sports like the track and field or swimming or boxing. I actually think that's why WADA had no choice here, but to apply this outright ban across all sports.
Well, fair play to them. We've had enough of Russia. We'll move to the Irish in Lisbon, which is a much better news story, to tell you the truth. It was a great week for the Irish. 4 medals from the European Cross Country Championships, and I suppose Ephraim Giddy was the highlight.
Yeah, you know, I've been watching the European Cross Country since 1994. That was the first year, the inaugural year, when Katrina McKiernan won gold. So possibly not the most successful in terms of gold medals, but definitely the most successful Irish in terms of the depth and range of medals. 4 medals across the 2 races. We've never won more than 2 medals in the 1 event before. And you mentioned Ephraim Giddy there, who really sort of set the trend and set the pace by winning bronze medal in the under-20 race, the junior race, which, by the way, was a super competitive race. It was won by Jacob Inge Britsen from Norway. He's probably one of the best runners in the world. So this was not a soft medal by any means. But I'm sure some of the listeners might be a little bit familiar with the Ephraim Giddy story at this stage in terms of where he's come from and his background, and only 2 years since he arrived in Ireland as an asylum seeker, having spent, to the best of our knowledge, several months, if not longer, at a refugee camp in Calais, came here with no English, but very little literacy skills, and by pure fortune, I suppose, fell in with a kind of running crowd up in Clonliffe Harriers, and through that, I think it's really kind of the integration has been, and inclusion has been dare I say, fast tracked a little bit, but he only really got clearance to run for Ireland as late as Friday, because he has all his Irish papers and passport, and so the passport is forthcoming, but he has his residency, but he had to travel to Lisbon on what's known as a Schengen visa. So he only decided for sure he was going there on Friday, and then, as I say, lines up in this super competitive race and wins a bronze medal. And I think that really did set the trend for the weekend. And you mentioned four medals, and funny enough, it could easily have been seven. Because the junior men finished a very close fourth. That was only decided on countback. Fionnuala McCormack, we saw, ran a brilliant race in the senior women, just ran out of a bronze medal in the last half of a lap. But that's actually her fourth place finish in the European cross country, which must be something of a record in itself. She's also finished fourth in the track twice before. So that was another medal gone there. And I forget as well, Sarah Healy, who's probably one of our most promising juniors, would have been in Lisbon, and I think would have certainly been in the running for a medal, but she had to pull out because of a virus. So four medals, yeah, but as I say, it could just have easily have been seven.
I know the team are set to land very, very shortly. We're just going to hear a quick clip from Ephraim Giddy.
I'm so happy. That's race for me. My first race, I'm doing good place. Very tough, because European is very big race. I'm doing it before little bit, just, you know, for Ireland, just one country. I'm not doing before for European. I'm so happy by that race.
And what can you tell me about the course?
Oh, that course very tough, because everything is hell. Very tough race. The beginning start is very fast race, you know. One lap is very fast. My body is very tired. But after two laps, my body is very strong. I have to go back. After three laps, so tired. Little bit tired and difficult. Very tough race that is. Very fast race. But that's good race for me.
And if you look at the course, do you like the grass like this, or you want more mud?
Oh, I don't know, like monkey. That's very tough. If you monkey, I don't know, like flat, I like. Flat just only, not hell. But that's good.
Ian, Ephron there, taking a bronze medal at 19. You know, the potential growth there, how good can this guy be?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I think the potential is almost unlimited at this stage. And as I say, when you consider where he's come from, just listening to his conversation there, I mean, his English is, I think we'll all agree, his English is not bad for a guy with no English 2 years ago. And by pure coincidence, my younger brother works in the English language company, Sverassi, which deals with a lot of asylum seekers and refugees and people who've come here from horrendous backgrounds. And he was his very first teacher. He was Ephraim's first teacher 2 years ago. And he remembers vividly him walking into the class and having no word of English, obviously, and, you know, very little, barely able to write his own name down. But from day one, was incredibly keen to learn and to study and to make the absolute best of his opportunity. And from there, he linked up, as I say, with Clonliffe. And then he went to the Cayley School up in Tyrrellstown in West Dublin. And I saw him win the Irish Schools Cross Country, was it last March? And I don't remember a more popular winner. He was coming down the straight and all his classmates were high-fiving him. And genuinely was a hugely popular winner. And it just, to say, a real example of how integration and inclusion can work in the sporting sense and in life. But as I say, only 19, and high quality race yesterday. He's run about 14:32 on the track, which is, as anyone will tell you, pretty good time for a 19-year-old. And I think we're going to see a lot more of him, hopefully in an Irish vest. Now again, no, without putting pressure on the guy, it's a big step up, obviously, to senior ranks. But he has all the qualities that you'd expect in a distance runner, and I think most of all, as I say, he's diligent. He paid credit to his coach, Joe Cooper, up in Clonliffe Harriers. And I think a big shout out to him as well, because Joe's one of these guys who's really taken him aside and worked him over the last year and a half to make sure that he doesn't get too carried away or doesn't do too much too soon. And as I mentioned, that race yesterday was a high quality race. So to come away with a bronze medal, it's only the second time in the history of these championships we've won a bronze medal at junior level. So it's certainly an outstanding achievement.
You mentioned Fionnuala McCormack there in her fourth place finish. I'm sure she'd be disappointed to miss out on the medal, but she keeps producing it year after year, doesn't she, Ian?
Yeah, it's gutted for her, you know. I mean, you know, what is she, 35 now? That was her 16th appearance in the European cross country, and I've lost count at this stage. Obviously, she's won it twice. She's finished fourth, as I say, four times, and I think about three or four of the top tens. But look, I mean, she was a bit unlucky yesterday because, again, it was a stacked race. She had Jasmine Kahn, the former Kenyan woman now running for Turkey. She won the race again, and the Swedish girl who finished third, also former Ethiopia. And by the way, I think it's important to point out here, because I know I've spoken before about athletes changing nationality or switching nationality, and we did see a lot of African born athletes winning medals yesterday, including our own, as I say, Ephraim Giddy. There's a slightly different situation there, though, with some of these athletes have been using kind of passports of convenience, whereby they run for other countries without ever living there, without ever training there, without even speaking that language. But I think with Ephraim Giddy, it's the absolute opposite. You know, he wasn't switching a nationality; he was finding one. But anyway, to go back to Fionnuala McCormack, yes, who she lost out to Jasmine Kahn, has won the last four editions of this race. And yeah, well, disappointed, but to use a cliche, silver lining in terms of the team medals winning silver, which is, again, a huge achievement, because I think they were very close to, it was between themselves and Portugal for silver and bronze. They edged out Portugal, who were obviously the host nation, and Great Britain winning. So yeah, team result, team silver medal to go with the silver medals won for the under-23 women certainly shows, again, a sort of a nice range and depth of certainly women's distance running.
Ian, the majority of that under-23's women's team are all in America in university and training there. I mean, Efran is in Ireland training here. What's the difference? Does there seem to be a difference?
Yeah, good question. I was actually writing about that today, because that's a kind of a throwback to the old days, where certainly my generation, everyone kind of went to America. That was kind of the done thing. It was kind of the Irish scholarship trail to places like Villanova or Providence or Arkansas or whatever. But you're right, that must be something of a first for an Irish athletics, where the three women who finished won the team medal is Stephanie Cotter, and then there's the Flanagan sisters. They're actually twin sisters from Tyrone, Roisin, and the three of them all attend Adams State, which is way up in the Rocky Mountains. It's kind of in the I wouldn't say in the middle of nowhere, but it's not the kind of place you'd normally associate with the Irish scholarship trainer. But they're all out there, and they've all done really well for themselves. They actually won the Division II cross country championship, collegiate championship, by finishing first, second, and third. So I think that's another example where, look, there's no right or wrong way of training. I mean, for years, you look at Ciara McGeehan, you look at obviously Fionnuala McCormack. They've all come from the Irish based system. But this is kind of a reassurance that it is still possible to go to America and to succeed out there as well.
A super run by Stephanie Cotter, who you mentioned there as well, Ian.
Yeah, incredible. I mean, she's from this tiny little village in East Cork, which name actually escapes me. But her father, believe it or not, I'm really showing my age now, her father used to run as well. I remember him from the Leavale days, and I think went to college in America briefly also. But the way she ran yesterday as well, I mean, this is the other thing about both Stephanie and about Ephraim. They didn't kind of come through for bronze medals. They were actually in silver for a long time and kind of just maybe got passed for silver in the last few strides. But she was out to win that race, and you know, it wouldn't have been far beyond her ability to do that. And she's only, I think, a second year sophomore in college, so she's got two more years in college. I think she's got maybe one more year under 23. So definitely going to hear a lot more about Stephanie Cotter.
Thanks, Ian. As always, we appreciate you taking the time. And Dunica is very excited there, because he has some WhatsApp voice messages.
Oh, no way. Brilliant. It's all I'm looking forward to. You can now WhatsApp us on 087-187-9200. So just save that in your phone. And if you ever want to slag Ruby Walsh, just go for it.
Cheers, Dunica. We're going to take a break. Next up is Stephen Ferris.
Game on 2FM.
With Gillette, new SkinGuard Sensitive Razor. The first razor of its kind designed to stop irritation on sensitive skin. Gillette, the best a man can get.
Welcome back to Game On. I'm playing Butchus Gally here between Dunica and Marie. Marie wouldn't play Dunica's WhatsApp highlights before the break. Dunica's now left the studio. So Marie, you come back.
Is that the name of a horse?
What's that?
Butchus.
My God, Marie, you just played a WhatsApp.
So my sporting highlight for the weekend would be Aidan O'Brien equalising for Millwall in the 92nd minute against Nottingham Forest on Friday night. was there. The atmosphere was pure electric. Brilliant.
Sporting highlight for the weekend for me would have to be Celtic's League Cup win over Rangers. An immense performance, I suppose, in goal from Fraser Forrester. It just goes to show that the better team on the day doesn't have to win. But I'm just thankful that Celtic got their 10th domestic cup in a row.
My sporting highlight this weekend would have to be Hyunmin Son's goal against Burnley. Left about 8 lads for dead. Some bio he is.
He's a right lad.
I love the WhatsApp, lads. I love the WhatsApps.
Can't say I've ever gone from Millwall beating Notts County now.
But isn't it brilliant to hear people? They're listening to us, Ruby. Not mad. And you can get in touch 087 187 9200.
What's next, Donners?
What's next? Yeah, we're straight to rugby. Champions Cup weekend, mixed for the Irish. 3 good wins, unfortunately, for Connacht. Coming up a little bit short, and we're lucky to be joined by former Irish wrecking ball, Stephen Ferris. But before we chat to Stephen, we're going to hear from Robin McBride, who was speaking to Michael Corcoran a little bit earlier on about Johnny Sexton's injury and how he thinks Leinster are shaping up.
Yeah, Johnny's a bit more serious, obviously. We don't know how serious an injury is going to be until he has a scan, and he'll have that scan further on today. With regards to James, obviously late on in the game, he took a bang, so he's just following the HIA protocols. He's in a good place today, so you know I don't expect there to be any sort of long-lasting effects from that.
And in terms of the game itself, I mean, you know, as a member of the coaching staff, you must have been pretty pleased with the way everything went. I mean, a pretty comprehensive performance and a really good win.
Well, it was in the end. We weren't that happy at halftime, and Stewart made that, you know, apparent to everybody. So there were certain things in the first half we didn't get right, and gave them an opportunity really to stay in the game. So I thought second half a pretty comprehensive performance in the second half.
That's probably what makes these back-to-back matches even slightly more dangerous then, isn't it? The fact you're playing the same opposition this week, there is the kind of slight danger of being lulled into a kind of a almost a false sense of security. If you can do that away from home, what can you do when you're at home?
Yeah, and we've made the players aware of that as well. You know, going back into the history of this competition and where Leinster have found themselves in the past, where they've gone away, had a great win, come back, and the following week started a bit slowly, you know, or struggled. So the players have been made aware of that. And obviously from the nature of Northampton, the nature of that defeat at home for them, they're going to be hurting as well. And they're going to want to be putting a few things right. And in many ways, they have, you know, their name's still in the hat at the moment. So while they've still got a chance, they're going to throw everything at us. So I think they'll play, if anything, with a bit more freedom on Saturday because they've got to go out there and win the game.
So on Saturday, it's Leinster against Northampton at the Aviva Stadium, a place you've been to many times before. When you get off the bus in the past, you've had to turn right and go into the away changing room. On Saturday, you have the rather unique experience of being in the home changing room for the first time.
Yeah, I've always liked turning left into changing rooms, to be honest here. No, it'll be a new experience. Obviously, I'm running on with the messages as well, so I'm pitch side. So that in itself gives me a completely different perspective on the game as well. But it's great, you know, it's a great learning experience for me, both on and off the field with regards to working with great bunch of coaches, players. So between everybody, they're making me feel very welcome.
And what are your impressions of the way everything is here? I mean, you'd probably have seen it from the outside without being up close and personal to the whole thing. You know, working with a pretty big squad, to be fair about it. Some quality coaches, as you said. I mean, it's different. It's a different challenge, but I mean, they're impressive people to work with here.
Yeah, and it's an impressive system or process that they've got. You know, it's a winning formula. So if you're on the outside always looking in, you're thinking, well, what have they got so right, you know? And that's what I've been hugely fortunate in being invited to join them as a coach. And I think the mainstay is obviously Leo, because he's here as a player and as a coach. So I don't think that there's no issues with getting coaches from outside of the country to get that diversity of working together as a coaching group. But I think to have Leo as that, you know, as that head man overseeing anything, I think that's vitally important.
That's Robin McBride chatting to Michael Corcoran. Stephen, thanks for joining us. It's great to hear Robin McBride giving Leo Cullen the credit he deserves.
Fantastic weekend of rugby. But yeah, it's brilliant to hear the words there. And he just sounds like an ultimate professional. He'd probably slip into this Leinster system seamlessly and, you know, bring a wealth of experience. And I think, you know, Leinster are just a really exciting team to watch at the minute. It doesn't matter which team Leo Cullen selects, they're going out and they're putting in a great performance and doing everyone proud at the club. And you know, they're going to be very, very tough to beat. But if you keep adding quality to your squad and to your coaching staff, then that's a recipe for success. And I'm sure McBride is licking his lips at the, you know, what's to come in the rest of the season.
Fez, Leinster are making statements every week. Make 14 changes and they go out and thump Gloucester. Northampton, top of the Premiership, everyone's saying how close it's going to be. 43-16 away from home. It was a statement for Europe, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it really was. And, you know, Northampton were in a good, rich vein of form. Come off the back of a few good wins. They absolutely hammered Leicester at Franklin's Gardens, and everybody was saying that this was going to be a really tight match. And, you know, I suppose it was tight for the first 15-20 minutes of the match. It was slightly cagey, and, you know, McBride talked about at half time there was maybe a bit of a rocket, and the guys went out and expressed themselves in the second half, running in tries like Roddick, Porter, Healy, McGrath, Lowe, Edburn coming off the bench and getting a try. You know, they were just scoring tries for fun. And the brand of rugby in particular that they are playing is, you know, it's brilliant on the eye, and their supporters are loving it and enjoying it. And, you know, that was a huge statement, as you say, to go to Franklin's Gardens and absolutely obliterate a pretty good Northampton team who's been going reasonably well in the Gallagher Premiership.
And Devon Toner seems to have turned his World Cup disappointment completely on its head, and he's flying as well.
He is, yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, Scott Fardy and obviously James Ryan in the second row, there's three second rows there that you wouldn't mind which one of those three started week in, week out. But Big Dev is, I think he was vocal enough when the whole of the World Cup was over about his disappointment of not being selected for the World Cup. And he probably didn't see it coming, like a lot of us, Ruby. You know, we didn't see it coming. And I think he's just been the professional man that he is, and has got the head down and has just been working really hard, and Leo likes him, and Leo likes what he brings to the team. And you know, he's a big man, he's got plenty of experience, and he seems to be playing with a little bit of confidence also. So Big Dev, you know, people are writing him off, I think, but I think his performances over the last few weeks has clearly shown that there's plenty more in the tank.
For me, Fez, he's a player that picks up match fitness by actually playing. Yeah. Athletes like you put him in the gym and they can hit the pitch, but I just find Dev's one of those guys, if you get him out on the pitch, he'll hit form.
Yeah, definitely. And he didn't get that pitch time, Donegal, in the World Cup warm-up matches. You know, there was all the talk around the second rows and what way Joe Smith was going to go, but he didn't pick Devon. And you know, everybody was saying, "Oh, he was coming back from injury. Maybe he was a little sluggish, you know, in training. He was slightly behind the other second rows." Well, that's maybe so, but you know, as you rightly say, there, somebody like Devon just needs to get on the pitch and get 60-70 minutes under his belt and do exactly the same thing the following week. I know that you were one of those players, Stunners, who just relished getting 80 minutes under his belt to get the match fitness up. So, I think it's shown in his game, as I said there over the last few weeks, that he's ready and round to go, and he's playing some of the best rugby of his career, especially on Saturday.
Dunners looks like he could do with another 80 minutes here at the moment. But Ross Byrne is fairly, he's obviously a big opportunity now with Johnny injured, but he came on and picked up seamlessly at the weekend.
Yeah, and you know, he was thrown to the wolves, you know, against England when they got absolutely thumped. You know, Jack Hardy ended up playing the following week, probably a slightly easier task than against England and Twickenham. And Ross, again, you know, a young player like him could easily have just you know, disappeared after that performance. But he's kind of grown in stature. He's, any opportunity that has been given to him, he's taken it. Earlier on in the season, it was down. I watched him play against the Ospreys in the first game of the Pro 14. He was absolutely superb. And, you know, with Johnny now looking like he's going to be out for a small part, then he's definitely going to step up to the plate. But I think you can say that about anybody, really, any one of the lads playing for Leinster at the minute. It doesn't matter what changes Leo makes, they just seem to come in and fit into the system, and that all comes to confidence. I think they're the only team in Europe that's unbeaten in all competitions, and it'd be interesting to see how long they can keep this going for.
Obviously Connacht got beaten by Gloucester the other day, and Jack Carty's form has been a little bit questionable since he came back from the World Cup. Could you see Andy Friend changing that and playing Conor Fitzgerald next week?
Well, I have have to say, Conor Fitzgerald really does look like a man who has all the credentials to be an international out half. His control, there was a pass, he zipped right across, right on the gain line. He takes the ball to the line, and he puts guys into holes. And, you know, Jack Carty is coming under pressure. I think Jack Carty's kicking game is extremely good, but you need a little bit more than that at the highest level, and I think Conor Fitzgerald has shown that in glimpses of it. Jack Carty started that game against Gloucester. They were in the game, but like Gloucester had 15 clean line breaks. You know, they broke them down easy enough at times, and you know, the game kind of got away from them at the end. I think it was Quinn Roo scored the last try to kind of make the scoreboard look a little bit more respectable. But yeah, I think Fitzgerald is going to really push him hard, and it wouldn't surprise me if he starts this weekend.
Stevie, every point matters, and Connacht will be gutted they didn't pick up a losing bonus point. But when you went and look at Ulster this weekend, they showed backbone to get back into that game against Harlequins, and John Cooney with that kick at the end, just that's the stuff that campaigns are won on.
Yeah, it is, and you've been part of games, Donners, where O'Garris hit a last minute drop goal, and you know, it takes you so far in a tournament, and it just keeps that momentum going. John Cooney, they call him the slot machine because he's so so accurate off the boot, and keeps sending the ball between the posts. He's been a revelation since he's come to Ulster. He really has, and all the lads are getting behind him. There's a few other boys in there, the likes of Marcel Coetzee, who I think has been probably the best number 8 in the competition so far. And you know, I think on reflection, and you know, taking the Ulster hat off at the weekend, I was working on the game. Harlequins probably deserved the edge, but at the same time, you know, it was a moment of madness from Kuvabati, who, you know, took one of the young fellas who came on off the bench out, and you know, give away an easy 3 points for somebody like Cooney to knock it over. And you know, Ulster are riding a bit of a wave at the minute, and you know, the Kingspan Stadium's a tough place to go. I think that's 17 matches unbeaten at the Kingspan, so they'll be looking to go over to the Stoop this weekend and try and put in another performance. The only thing that I would say is that some of the big hitters in Europe are sneaking bonus points. You know, they're getting five points, they're getting 4 tries on the board and getting those 5 points. But Ulster will just be happy enough with the way things are going and they're winning. And fingers crossed they can keep that going and try and sneak another one away from home.
Stephen, thanks so much for joining us. We'll be covering the Munster Saracens game with Craig Doyle in the next hour, but it was a tight weekend of Champions Cup. Thanks, Fez.
No worries. Cheers, lads.
So coming up after the break, John O'Shea is with us, and he's going to talk Premier League, and he will also give his thoughts on the FAI. The latest news from the FAI is that the Minister for Sport, Shane Ross, will not attend the emergency Oireachtas Committee meeting that will examine the financial situation at the FAI. Back after these.
Text 51552.
Game on. Weekdays from 6.
Now to soccer, and former Republic of Ireland international John O'Shea joins us on the line. John, how are you?
Evening, Marie. Yeah, all good. Thanks.
Good.
And yourselves?
Yeah, we're all good here. Well, I don't know, myself and Donegal aren't getting on too great today, but we're going to try and power through. Ruby's acting like the referee.
There's a rift in the camp.
There's a rift.
Oh, well, there's no better man to solve it.
You know all about that this weekend when Manchester was divided, wasn't it?
It was, but thankfully it came out red in the end, thankfully.
Now, John, before we get on to the Premier League, we are going to talk about the FAI because, as I'm sure you know, the crisis is worsening every passing day. The latest blow was the revelations in the accounts on Friday. The amount of debt the FAI are in is absolutely staggering. Just wondering, what are your thoughts on the state that the association is in right now?
Yeah, look, it's obviously not pretty, and that's obviously an understatement. The reports came out just beforehand that the figures weren't going to be nice, but obviously when they did come out, the actual total figure was, it's quite staggering, really, and it shows the amount of work that's going to have to go into getting everything back into line and back into the people's confidence of what they think the FAI should be, you know, and what it stands for. And it's going to be tough, but thankfully, I'd hope it can only go higher, if you know what I mean. Things can only improve, you know. So, in that sense, it's a believe me, a very, very small positive that the only way it can go is improve and get better.
Are you concerned about the future of Irish football, John?
No, I don't think so, because I think I would have to say the majority of people that I've ever dealt with and been involved with in teams, being selected for the Irish team under 15 and obviously being involved from coaches from Ferrybank and Bowes and Waterford and stuff like that, it's, there's amazing people working in football, so I don't think we should be worried about the future of it in that sense. I think there's amazing people that are willing to work there and put in the work and put in honest work, and if we can get behind them and get the right support in place, that it will improve and will get better again.
And we hope it does, because it is a sorry state of affairs for all those people at the grassroots level. But we will move on to Manchester and the red half taking over the blue half again, John.
He's delighted.
Which was the highlight of the weekend, without doubt.
You should have heard him last week, John. He was slagging off United.
Look, I think when they put in that performance against Tottenham, it was very pleasing. But then the big question was, you're coming up against a different animal in Manchester City at the Etihad. And what could they do? Could they back it up? And let's be honest about it, they could have been out of sight nearly at half time. It could have been 3 or 4 nil at half time. You know, I think City are maybe the one they showed against Burnley. I thought they had maybe turned a bit of a corner because they had been looking a little bit shaky. But then they go and hammer Burnley, and then I thought, right, United hammer took. Well, they didn't hammer Tottenham, but they really dominated against Tottenham. And then this was going to be a big acid test, and they flew past with flying colours.
Like, when you look at United's record against City, Liverpool, Chelsea, Arsenal, Spurs, Leicester, they've competed in all those games, but yet against Cardiff, Palace, Newcastle, they lost. They drew with Huddersfield and Rochdale. Yeah. Like, they don't take their chances in the small games, yet they seem to take them against the bigger teams.
It's crazy, isn't it? It's crazy. And I think, as well, it just so happens, it's like as if it's suiting United to play against the so-called bigger teams in the sense, and then against the smaller teams, because they sit back. United can't use that blistering pace that they have, and they use it so devastatingly against City. You know, Rashford obviously is in really top form at the minute. Martial looked as if he fancied it, and then obviously Daniel James, Lingard's coming back to form, and then obviously the defence had to stand up for the last 10-15 minutes against Tottenham and against City, and they were able to do it.
Yeah, John, just on that, like, you've shared a dressing room with Ollie. Like, how does that happen? Because that's not his mindset, is it?
As in what?
Ruby's point there, that they can lift it for all the big teams, the Spurs, the Man City. It's like, it is Man United after all.
No, they are. In my head, I think they're preparing probably even more for the so-called smaller teams in the Premier League, because they realise they have to, and it's just not coming off of them, because obviously maybe that extra bit of quality, whether it needs to come from someone at the back or someone in midfield, that the other teams seem to have at the minute, that United still are maybe just lacking a small bit. They're improving greatly, and there's still a bit of inconsistency because they have a lot of younger players still playing, and if they can just get that little bit of mixture in with the experience, I think to help them out in January, there's some amazing positives for United fans, I think, this season.
John, by all accounts, Roy Keane went in to give them a bit of a team talk over the last few days. What would Roy Keane say in a team talk now, do you think, to Manchester United?
It would have been colourful, I imagine. No, look, it would have been very precise. And a lot of, obviously, Roy, knowing him for so many years, it would have been very simple and clear and to the point. And it's getting the... Your past appreciation, your touch, your control, then looking forward, looking positive, wanting to play positive passes. Don't be taking soft options, don't be taking easy options. You're at Manchester United to win, you're at Manchester United to compete. Don't be scared of all those things, and it would have been, I'm sure, it would have been a reminder of all that and what it takes to face these games and what it takes to have the responsibility of wearing that shirt.
You probably just didn't tell him to go and watch Liverpool and look what Jurgen Klopp is doing, because that's positive football, and look what they did at the weekend again.
He said on the telly the other night, or yesterday, we all know how difficult it is to win 3 Premier Leagues.
Nice.
Well, look, it's one of them. If you're looking at Liverpool, no matter what team or selection he's making as well at the minute, they just seem to be, obviously, they're in that confident mode. changing teams, changing resting players. Mane's left out, Alexander Arnold left out this weekend, Salah was left out beforehand. You know, they're really in a confident moment, and look, it's an incredible lead they have, and Leicester seem to be the ones who are trying to keep pace with them, and I think they played them soon enough too, don't they? I think it's on Stephen's Day maybe. So it's an incredible situation for Liverpool to be in, and they really have to be strong favourites to finish it off this year.
In three games in 7 days, Brighton, Everton and Bournemouth, only Van Dijk played the full minutes, which is unbelievable, and they had seven different scorers in that time. It has to come down to good management though as well, John, doesn't it?
Ah, totally it does, and that's the confidence you give. I think when obviously there was a few eyebrows raised for his team selection against Everton in a derby game, but then the display of the players, that Origi, Shaqiri, can't remember who else, there was a couple, I think he might have played Lallana,
Keita,
and even against Bournemouth as well, the goal, the assist from Salah, that finish. You know, they really are in a confident mood, and he's obviously testing the squad beforehand because he knows it's going to be really needed with the amount of games they have. I think they were going to be playing 10 or 11 games in the space of 30 days with the World Club Championships coming up as well. So it was a perfect time to really test the squad, and they've come through it with flying colours so far.
Have players' mindset changed, John, in terms of you want to be a part of a squad now? You know that, like, players like yourself, if you weren't playing every week, you'd get frustrated and annoyed, where team players nowadays seem to be happy to be a part of a winning squad.
The key word you said there was winning. That's what makes it not very easy, but a lot easier for managers to change the team around and to say to a player, like Sir Alex used to say to us, right, you're playing this week, but I'm going to leave you out this week, but you're playing against Arsenal next week, or you're playing in the Champions League next week. You can kind of plan that bit ahead. And while the player's not happy, he somehow kind of obviously accepts it because the team's winning, you're in a good moment. And that's where you go. If you look at all the teams that are successful, any league in Europe or around the place, they have to have big squads because, look at Liverpool now, they have that 10, 11, 12 games, 30 days, something crazy. So to maintain that performance level, you have to have a fully fit squad, hopefully, and then a quality players to replace quality that are starting in the team.
John, from an Irish perspective, we saw Troy Parrott make his Premier League debut over the weekend. How big a deal is it to see an Irish kid, 17 years old, go out and play for Spurs in the Premier League?
It's huge. It really is huge, obviously. After seeing him kind of up close now for the Irish game and making his debut and now making his Premier League debut, I think the momentum can, like, obviously there's a lot of hype beforehand, but I think Mourinho obviously has seen something in training, whether it be his personality, his physicality also, because you're not going to be able to play in the Premier League if you're not physically able to cope with it. Obviously Pochettino had him in training with the first team for a good few months too, so Mourinho's obviously been impressed. And if you're impressed with Mourinho and Pochettino, you must be doing something right. So fingers crossed he stays fit and healthy. I'm sure he'll get a bit more game time over the Christmas period, and it could be a real big boost for Ireland coming into March.
Does that show how much Mourinho's changed? When he signed first for Spurs, everyone was nervous that, you know, that Troy Parrott might have to go out on loan, whereas Mourinho's given him his, given him his head and putting him out there.
Yeah, and I think, look, he'll know as well, Mourinho, the kind of bit more scrutiny that he's under. When teams when he's gone into teams, people have said he's not really looked at the youth setup and the younger players coming through. So maybe ultimately, look, as much as his words when he says, I think when his first day when he took the Tottenham job, he spoke about the academy and the younger players, etc. And obviously a lot of people would have just thought that was just a bit of a smokescreen. He likes the older, experienced players. But if a player stands out, like hopefully Troy Parrott is doing, that it just takes care of itself. And Harry Kane is going to need that competition, a bit of a rest here and then. And if Troy Parrott can get the benefit of that and showcase his talents, it's going to be huge for Ireland.
John, thanks a million. If you have Jose's number, give him a shout there and see if you can get Troy a better number than 52, will you? Thanks a million.
You don't like that squad number?
No, it's desperate. He'll be back after the news and the break.
Game on. WhatsApp 087 187 9200.
Hi lads, John here from Cork. Just want to say absolutely love the show. Dunnock, you're doing us proud. Bye. Probably talk about rugby a little bit too much. Most people don't even know the rules. Highlight of the weekend, United obviously, hammering City. Keep up the good work. Love the show. Cheers.
My highlight of the weekend was seeing Daniel Flynn back in the fold with Kildare Footballers and his brother Luke. As good as Daniel is, Luke is just as good, just as big, just as strong. So it's great to have these two boys on the Kildare panel for 2020.
Some good highlights there, lads.
I love the WhatsApp. Like, it, honestly, Dunnock. And that's from a fellow in Cork.
Imagine that, like.
Keep them coming, though. And you know what would be great? If people left their names or nicknames, I'd like a nickname.
Would you?
087-187-9200. I even need to get better at the number.
You're getting there, Dunnock. You're getting there.
Yeah, I'm not there yet.
Dunnock. That's what I'm calling you.
Dunnock.
Dunnock.
Right, enough of that, because we are moving on to racing.
Woohoo.
Let's hear the commentary from the Tingle Creek.
Game on, racing.
At the second loss, under so by two lengths to Deffy Desoy, who's now being shaken up by Barry Geraghty. Under so, can he hold the younger horse? Is under so and Deffy Desoy, they race towards the final fence, together in the air. Under so, far side. Deffy Desoy now hits the front, waiting patiently back in third, running on well up the hill. Deffy Desoy, under so, is trying to fight back on the far side, waiting patiently, finishing well, but it's Deffy Desoy who just wins the Tingle Creek. Under so carried out on his shield in second. What a run. And waiting patiently, finishing strongly in third.
Well, that was last Saturday's Tingle Creek, one of the most exciting races of the season, and ordinarily it would have been my highlight of the weekend, only Barry Geraghty went and beat my favourite under so. Barry, how are you and well done?
Good, Ruby, thanks. Yeah, that was great. Delighted to beat your favourite.
Sure you are.
We're delighted you did as well.
Yeah, keep them quiet, I suppose.
Yeah, you keep doing that, Barry.
If you could give us lessons to keep them quiet.
Dunnock here is all ears.
About 20 years I tried that and I couldn't manage it.
Barry, I was very impressed from Deffy Desoy on Saturday. The way he travelled early in the race for you, the way he jumped, I thought 2 miles could be too sharp for him, but he fairly proved me wrong.
No, he was good. Yeah, he travelled really well, jumped well. He still has a bit to improve with his jumping. He was good early. He was very good at the first two down the back. Got close to the ditch, got close to the water. But he was better over the railways for that experience, and good at the pond fence. And he was good. He was good at the last two. And he's got a good bit of pace, so he's comfortable at 2 miles.
And at Tingle Creek, I always loved riding in it. It's such a thrilling race. That back straight in Sandown, seven fences, helter skelter. There's no thrill quite like it.
No, if you're on the right horse, there's no better race. You know, the seven in a row, and they come at you fast. And if you have the right horse who's willing to take the chances that are needed, you know, there's nothing better.
You've ridden plenty of good 2 milers in your day, Moscow Flyer, Sprinter Sacre. Where would you be putting Deffy Desoy with those horses?
He's heading that direction. He jumps well, his jumping will improve, he's got the pace. He's probably actually got more speed than Moscow Flyer had. Sprinter Sacre just a very high cruising speed, but he's got a great kick, so he has. So he's only six, and I think he's still learning as he races, jumping especially. It took him a few runs early on last year as a novice to get the hang of it. And he was running over 2.5 miles for that reason, because it just gave him more time to organise himself. But as he's getting sharper, I think coming back and trip is suiting him well.
Barry, which race at Cheltenham do you think would suit him best?
Well, the options would be, well, the obvious ones would be the Champion Chase at 2 mile, and after last Saturday, you'd have to say that that's the way you'd be looking at for now. The other option being the Ryanair, the 2.5, having won at Cheltenham last year over 2.5, and even there was talk of a Gold Cup, which you couldn't rule out. But at the minute, you'd have to say Champion Chase being favourite, Ryanair maybe second favourite.
Yeah, I actually thought, watching him last year after following him in the JLT, that he was more of a Gold Cup horse, but when I watched him at the weekend, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, well, he has a lot of speed, and you know, I think there's still improvement in him. He's only six, and he's really improved this season and last season. And obviously last year's form, when he was beaten Lost in Translation and got beaten by Lost in Translation, that's worked out well, and he looks like a major contender for both the King George and the Gold Cup.
Obviously, next weekend, Barry, the show moves on. It's to Cheltenham for the Caspian Caviar Gold Cup. I imagine Breelon Das will reoppose Happy Days, Happy Diva again, even, will he?
Yeah, I'd imagine that's the plan. It looks a competitive race at a glance. He got a £5 penalty for finishing second, which, as you know, is never, you know, doesn't help a horse, and it you know, draws the rest of the field closer to you. But he ran well there last time. I think he enjoyed that trip, so he'd have a chance in an open race.
And in the other big race on Saturday, of course, is the International Hurdle. I mean, with your own horse Bouvard there out now, Pentland Hills is going to run in that. It's a very open looking champion hurdle. Can you see the 4-year-olds stepping up?
They think a lot of them, so they do, in Seven Barrows and Henderson's Yard. They think a lot of them, they taught a lot of them going to the Triumph Hurdle. Nico couldn't see him being beaten on the day, he told me. So he is a good horse. I know 4-year-olds don't have a brilliant record stepping into the Champion Hurdle until this season just gone by. He'd have to be a player in what is an open race. As you know, Classical Dream maybe didn't live up to expectations in the Morgiana. So it's thrown it all wide open now, especially with Bouvard being on the sidelines.
It surely does. I was going to say to you, Champ last week in Newbury, it was a bit in and out, but he does look a really exciting novice.
Yeah, no, he took a good bit of work early on before he ran to get his technique good. He jumped well, he caught the heels of a loose horse at the third fence, and he came out of my hands. He came up a straight early, if you like, at the third last and landed on top, but that just stalled a bit of momentum. But he got running on well, and luckily I managed to go the right side of the water jump on the run to the line, which was a help. But it was a good performance. He'll be better stepping up and trip when he does step up and trip. He's definitely going the right direction.
I'd imagine he'd go to the Dipper probably on New Year's Day, which will temper your New Year's Eve. But have you any idea about Christmas and where you'd be going?
No idea at all where I'll be at Christmas. With Bouvard Air side in, that kind of puts a dampener on Kempton, so I don't know where I'll be. I'd imagine that the plan originally was for Champs to go for the Dipper in Cheltenham on New Year's Day, so unless there's an issue, I'm sure that's where he will be.
And by yourself, it must be great to be back again after the leg break. I'd say Ruby won't ask you about it anyway because he doesn't give anyone any sympathy.
He'd tell you put a band-aid on it.
Well, he actually told me to put a frame on it. So I had the frame for 13 weeks. In fairness to him, he rang Paul and my wife about a half an hour after the Grand National to see how we were getting on, and she said to him, well, they're talking about a frame or a plate. He said, get the frame. So in 13 weeks, I cursed that man for the eternal frame.
But you're not cursing me now.
I will say that I would thank him afterwards. It worked out better in the long run, but it was hell for 13 weeks.
Really? Why? What was it like?
Well, it probably wasn't bad in the early days because it gave reasonable support, if you like, but swelling was an issue early on. But when you got moving probably in the last 3 or 4 weeks and you're walking, the pin sights I had, I'd some up high on my shin, middle of my shin, and then there was a good few down around my ankles. So as I got moving, you get up in the morning, you'd feel great. By lunchtime, the pin sights would start tearing, and it was, I promise you, horrific.
Ruby's actually cringing here now.
Yeah, and it swelled worse in the last couple of weeks because of all of that. And I was never as happy to have something removed from me like that.
And Barry, have you noticed, like, obviously you're 40 now, that the recovery process, you know, when you were a bit younger, I noticed it myself, injuries seemed to clear up so quickly, but just, age can sometimes slow things down.
There's no doubt. I have a now 4-year-old who broke his leg as a 2-year-old, and he was running around in the car after 12 days.
There's a so, child now, not a horse.
Yeah, well, Raiden. So he proves that it does heal a bit quicker. But the physios and everyone, they were all happy with the time scale. 6 months was, I believe, a more realistic target than the 4 I gave us. So timing-wise, it was good anyway. Start of October, get going for the winter, and you know, you're back into full swing now. So like that, I'm running. I always ran plenty. I'm back running again, and it's not giving any issue.
And did you ever think you'd given it up?
I can't believe you asked that question.
What are you looking for, a scoop? Sorry, no, Boomery. She's
just
media.
Just tell her to go away, Barry.
not on the horizon, Ray. Sorry.
Yeah, well, I'm Barry. She's
I
in bad
when
old
you
form.
Were injured.
Stand up for yourself.
No. All I wanted was morphine when it happened. Once I got the morphine, I was fine.
Oh, yeah. I know that feeling. I know it well. But you want to hear that Donica was describing his injuries early to me about how he noticed age was catching up with him. He was talking about cuts healing on his knees. He considered them injuries.
Barry, I can't live with your injury rate. You know, that just what you think is normal is off the chart.
Well, sure, I don't know, sure. You can get good runs. I had a great run for years, and then in the last 5 years I broke both arms, both legs, shoulder blade. I did seven ribs and punctured a lung. So I've had a bad run in the last 5 years, but I had a good run before that.
I never thought of giving it up.
No, wasn't really. Plan B isn't. I didn't really have a plan B, so I'm going to stick with plan A.
I agree with you. Yeah. Barry, thanks a million for taking the call.
Cheers, Rob.
Cheers, Barry.
Bye. See you, Donica.
See you.
Game on. WhatsApp 087 187 9200.
My sporting highlight of the weekend would have had to be Jakob Ingebrigtsen. He won the junior race four times, which is pretty much unheard of. I rank it above all the Irish performances because it's just it's crazy. It's out of the world. Like I'd nearly put money on it that he's going to be the next Kipchoge or Kenenisa Bekele. He's a phenom in the making.
Howie lads, highlight of the weekend was the McSharries and Donica fighting with the other two judges about the tyre flip. That tickled me. Good luck.
That was a good one.
Yeah, I love the WhatsApps. They're brilliant. And I love Barry Geraghty. He's our new favourite jockey. Are you all right with that, Ruby?
He is most definitely a brilliant jockey. I got put in my place here as well. Tell Ruby the 52 of Tri Parrots is 5 plus 2 equals 7. So 52 does have a meaning.
Can I ask, if you had to have a squad number, what would it be? Crow?
9.
No.
Oh, glory hunter. Goal scorer, stood at the front there, just tapping him in.
Obviously.
What about a real jersey, like 5, 4, 5, 6?
Yeah, I'd take a 4 or 18.
You were a 4.
You were glad to get 4 and everything, haven't you?
I was going to go for 18. What about you, Ruby?
Me?
Yeah.
What number would I like?
Yeah.
Probably 5 or 6.
I thought you'd go 10.
No, I would have said 6. Now, to football.
Or 16.
Why are you looking at me like that
for? 16.
16, okay, yeah, we can have that. Now, football fans are going to be in for a treat tonight because at 9:35 on RT1, there's a super documentary set to air called In League with Gaddafi. And we are delighted to have the director, Kevin Branigan, in studio with us. Kevin, you're very welcome to Game On.
Delighted to be here, thank you.
What's your sporting highlight of the weekend?
Oh,
my sporting
question.
Highlight of the weekend, I suppose Michael Darragh McCauley coming on for Ballyboden. I'm not from Ballyboden, but I just really like Michael Darragh McCauley and I like seeing him do well.
Oh, good. Yeah, that was a good one.
Did you not see Fittest Family, Kevin? Like, he's a brake man. Mona McSharry ripped a tyre around the place.
He's getting paid by the mention.
We are not plugging your show anymore. We are here to plug.
We're going to find
it. Started on Too Talented Christmas special.
Put a cup on the table, and every time you mention it from now on, you're going to put a fiver in it.
Okay, let's do that.
I'm done.
Or else we'll tell him that he can't have his dinner. Okay, we're going to hear about Kevin's show.
League of Ireland's news, Bohemians and St. Patrick's Athletic are heading off to Colonel Gaddafi's Libya.
It may not have been the brightest thing that anyone ever did in football.
I'm a bad guy. Duh.
Gaddafi was at that time a world figure and he was painted as the devil himself.
Put the boys in the better land.
10,000 tons, it's twice our largest ever Libyan beef order.
Have you supplied weapons to the IRA?
Nourish Selected was called to go over and play. I think it was 80,000 people that decided.
There was fellas and horses hiding machine guns.
I think they might have been spun a bit of a story that was the Irish international team were coming.
In League with Gaddafi, Monday at 9:35 on RTE1.
So Kevin, that is your documentary. I saw it. It's absolutely brilliant.
Thank you.
Tell us, how did you come up with the idea?
I come up with the idea, I suppose, first off, because I'm a Bowls fan. And
I was wondering how long it was going to take you to say that first answer. Well done.
First answer. And as you know, like, a lot of Bowls matches and a lot of football matches in general are quite boring. But thankfully that the people I go to games with and stand around with, they always have something interesting to say. So for most of the matches, we just chat away. And one day, it must have been back in like 2013 or something like that, I think Bowes, friend of mine, Patter, he told me, did you ever hear of this game that took place between Bowes and Libya back in the 80s under Colonel Gaddafi? And I didn't really believe him. And then we went into the bar, and hanging up above the bar, there's this like green plate with Arabic writing on it and a sword going across it. And I was like, that was the present that was gifted to Bowes for taking part in the match. And my interest was obviously peaked then. And I wrote an article for a magazine, and then spent the next kind of up until last October looking for this VHS tape that every player who was on the trip said they had but couldn't find. And it was just one day I was kicking around town and I got a phone call off Pat Fenlon, you know, Expos Pat, he's now managing director up in Linfield, I think. But I got a phone call off Pat and he was like, I've just found the VHS going through my attic. And I hopped on the Lewis, got it off him, and from there we were able to make the documentary.
It's a really, really good watch, like, but I still can't figure out how they played the match before they got the bag of cash.
Before they got the bag of cash, exactly, yeah. Like, the whole reason they seem to have ended up in Libya was because they were just so absolutely broke that they would have went anywhere to do anything. And also because Brian Kerr is just a bit of a buzzer and wanted an adventure, as your dad will probably know. And he was... Yeah, but they played the match before they got the cash, and that's kind of... Like, it's a caper and it's a heist story, and, you know, it's got a bit of a twist at the end.
Oh, it does. And it's even, like, to go through how the... how it was funding the two teams, Bo's and Pat's, and the adventure for the lads to go on, and to listen to them sit, the two guys sitting in the bar talking about it, and the taxi driver. It's a really, really good watch.
Yeah, and I suppose the thing I wanted to do was show that, like, you know, League of Ireland players, they're not like, you know, footballers. League of Ireland players definitely in the 80s are not like the footballers we'd know today, even League of Ireland players today. Like, there were lads who were doing 9-to-5 jobs. Most of them are doing backbreaking jobs, you know, working on the council, being a butcher, you know, manual labour jobs. But they were still able to have these big adventures in their life, and they were still able to go off and do, like, really, you know, interesting and cool things.
And, like, they're talking about going to find their passports, or to go and get a passport so they could go to Libya and head off on this adventure in the late 80s. And then, what way was it sold? They were half sold that there was the Irish team that was coming.
Well, that's the thing. Like, when I was started interviewing the lads who I interviewed in the film, there was always this thing in the background that when they landed in Benghazi, the local press was like, where's Ronnie Whelan? Where's Ronnie Whelan? Because obviously Ronnie had scored the shinner against the Soviet Union in Euro 88 a couple of months beforehand, and he would have been known for being the big, you know, Liverpool player who was sweeping around Europe at the time. And everyone kept saying, that's him, that's him, that's him. But I wasn't really too sure how true it was until I interviewed the two Libyan lads who you see in the film, Khalid and Captain Ali. And they come out with a line of, like, you know, you see these people on the TV and every now and again, and next thing you're standing 5-10 metres from them. But they were standing 5-10 metres from Pat Fenlon and Johnny Mack, not Ronnie.
It's a great watch. And then when they realise during the match that number 12 is actually the best player they have, and all they want to do is nobble him. Great shots of them, like, just taking the legs completely out of number 12.
It was lovely getting to interview the two Libyan lads in it, because they looked back at it, like, obviously Libya's gone through a tragic history in the last decade or so, but they looked back at it with real warmth. You know, I didn't burst their bubble that it wasn't the Irish team that they played, the Euro 88 Irish team. I let them still believe that, but everyone seemed to have fun, and, like, there's like 50,000 people at the stadium as well.
And did Brian Kerr ever tell you the real story of how they got out of the prison when they got locked up for drinking in the place out in the desert?
Brian negotiated the lads' release, and that was the official statement.
I thought we were going to get a scoop down, Marie.
Johnny McDonald said in it that Brian had a knack of bringing them to places that were troubled.
I suppose what he meant by that was Brian would be very much of, like, you know, hands over the border kind of thing, and he used to bring his teams up to the north at the height of the troubles in the late 80s and play against teams from mainly loyalist areas like Glentoran and Linfield and stuff like that. He was trying to build bridges, Brian. But also Brian has just a real sense of adventure, and he ended up taking teams to Tunisia, to Iran during the Iran-Iraq war, and also a year after that they get a match against Steaua Bucharest, but it's only about 2 weeks after Ceausescu has fallen. And the lads are saying that, and there's a clip of that in the film as well, when the lads are saying you can hear the guns going off in the background, and literally just streets are littered because, you know, there's the fall of the Ceausescu regime. And Brian, he's kind of like that Rolling Stones song, you know, Sympathy for the Devil. He just keeps popping up in these places.
The atmosphere at the match looked absolutely amazing, and a few of the lads in the dock said they'd never played anything like it.
They had definitely never played in a match that was preceded by a 3-hour military parade in honour of Colonel Gaddafi. Like, that wasn't happening in Richmond Park or Dailymount Park every second week, you know. But the atmosphere looks incredible. Some of them actually didn't actually really remember the match, so I don't know how that was possible, you know. But
if you listen to some of their accounts, like, when the four different guys are jazzed, it goes from 80,000 to 70,000 to 60,000. But I think there was 50,000 there. It's just how and even they say themselves, and they came back, how the story just grew legs and got better and better. But it's brilliant. It's really good.
The bag of cash, what did they get it changed to? Because it was in local currency.
Well, Libya at the time was not really the place where you would be going on holidays, and it was a bit of a, you know, it was kind of like on the enemy number one watch list for the West. So Libyan currency, dinar, wasn't really too accepted in Dublin at the time. So that's kind of like, you know, after they played the match, it's a run around Tripoli looking to try and piece together some sterling and some dollars. But, you know, they got a bit of cash, but I think it was mainly adventure that drove them there as well.
But think about it, like, they've played the game, they have no ransom. Surprised to get any cash at all. The game is over at this stage.
It probably involved Brian doing a bit more negotiating, you know.
He did some job.
Kev, we've some great characters in the league here in Ireland over the years, and you seem to have direct line to a lot of them.
Yeah, it's a Ouija board or something I have. I've been knocking around doing League of Ireland TV production for like a long time, so I'd know all the lads, and I'd hear all these stories in passing. And I really think in the league, it's a really rich league that we've delved into GAA, we've delved into rugby to an extent, but we've delved into, like, you know, the Jack Charlton glory years and stuff like that, but we definitely haven't delved into the stories that are in the League of Ireland. Like, there's one story of UCD going on a friendly and ended up in Africa and the match being called off because of machine guns and stuff on the pitch. And if anyone's listening, don't steal that idea on me, because that could be the next one. But yeah, there's some real great characters in the league, because, you know, these are all ordinary men basically doing ordinary lives and then doing this football on top of it. A lot of people with a good sense of adventure in the league, but a lot of stories there too.
Kevin, with all these brilliant characters, these brilliant topics, will you do more docs?
Hopefully, yeah. You know, I just need Colm O'Callaghan and RTÉ just to keep commissioning them, you know, and I think they will, you know.
Yeah, definitely after this one, they will. We'll go back to what the league was like then, because I think it gave an insight into how difficult it was. Your doc gave an insight into how difficult it was in Ireland at that stage. Mm.
Well, I suppose the thing, when you're making a documentary, you see a lot of footage that you don't use, and you go through a lot of newspaper reports and stuff. And I was, like, you know, going to college and stuff, the line in journalism class was, if it bleeds, it leads, you know. And then you're looking at news reports from Ireland in the 80s, and it's not leading with all the deaths from that day, because there were so many. And it just seemed like, I was born in 88, but it just seemed like a really grim time, you know. And to have any sort of an outlet by being able to play football and stay in the country and stuff like that seemed like a really good escape for these lads as well, you know. But Eamon McCann went against my theory. He's interviewed in the documentary as well. He went against my theory that it was a grim time. He thought it was a great time. He was like, we're just having a lot of fun. Eamon actually ended up interviewing Gaddafi about 3 times and was as a Derry City fan. But the league, I kind of maybe gets painted a little bit grimly in the documentary that you'll see tonight. But 89 was also the year that Derry City entered and brought big crowds and stuff like that. And that's another big story. But yeah, Ireland was definitely a different place, where teams had to end up going to Libya to get a bit of cash. But I think it was an apt weekend as well to be talking about dictators in Irish football.
We can't say what we were going to say.
Where did we go?
You've ruined Ruby's point with that throwaway.
Right, sorry. I read his notes.
No. What I was going to say, the next comment I was going to make, I now realise I can't make.
Right. Okay, we're going to move on, because you have, it's not your first documentary as well. Tell us about some of the other ones you've made, Kev.
The one I made last year was Cares Kids, and it was about Brian's youth teams of the late 90s. Also, it was around the time that the rugby teams were breaking through as well, with Brian O'Driscoll and stuff on the under 21s team and that. But Brian's youth teams of the late 90s, which, like, you know, John O'Shea, Richie Sadler, though I keep name checking Richie, though he didn't have as great a career as John O'Shea or Damien Duff or Robbie Keane. But yeah, Brian can centre point a lot to build a documentary around, you know. And it was while we were making the doc with Cares Kids that was like, Brian, we're going to make a trilogy out of this. So we just need to find out what part 3 is.
Stephen Kenny something.
Yeah, Stephen Kenny's kids, you know. Why not? But I don't think he's going to be in charge for the under 21 World Cup. But yeah, flying the wall with Stephen Kenny, I think, would be quite good.
Aaron Connolly, Troy Parrott, etc.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
That, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I suppose, yeah, if you look at what Troy Parrott did this weekend, it really did, you know, show you that there can be some good shining stuff in bright stories in Irish football as well, not just the negativity.
Yourself and Brian Kerr must get on great.
I don't think so. I think Brian is a bit worried that I'm going to pester him again to do something else. So yeah, if Brian's listening, I'll leave him alone for now. Like,
but Kev, you see something in him, like us all. There's a kind of giddiness. There's a character there, isn't there?
Yeah, I love Brian. I love the way that, like, he just retains this sense of love for life and love for adventure and just doing stuff. And he also has the ability to, you know, lead groups of people, you know, be they young lads that include Robbie Keane, or be they a group of lads who end up going to a war zone, you know. You'd follow him through hell, kind of thing.
Didn't sound like he did much shite at times, now, in all fairness.
Probably not, no.
When you watch the nice documentary, you'll know what we mean.
Yeah.
So, Kev, here's your chance. Plug the doc.
The doc is on RT1, the big leagues, 9:35 after the news and weather, I suppose. Is the weather still all about storms? But it's 9:35 tonight on RT1.
Fantastic, and it's great rugby, isn't it?
It is. It's very enjoyable to watch.
Can I just make a point before we let Kev go? Yeah. Rugby never likes anything. Look at this.
This is incredible.
This is the happiest I've ever seen him talking about anything. That's
a smile, Kev.
Thanks, Ruby. Ruby's won me a lot of money down there.
Normality has been restored in the Game On studio. Marie and Dunnick are ganging up on Ruby, and now it's time for a break.
Kev, thanks. FM.
Text 51552. Game On. Weekdays from 6.
We have lots of texts in, people sending us their sporting highlights of the weekend. Ballyboden Leinster Senior Champions. That's a sporting highlight from one of our texters.
Great game, wasn't it?
The end of it was good when it got a bit exciting, but that's what happens when you send lads out playing Leinster Championships in December.
Give them the hard pitches, Marie. Leave the horses and the rugby.
Like Ballyboden had been averaging about 20 points a game.
I just made a comment, Marie. You're getting all defensive.
That's because I know where you're going with it.
Going where am I going?
You're going to slag off Gaelic football.
I am not. I'm just going to slag off the GAA fixtures committee.
You need to be put on it. Put Ruby on the committee.
I want a job.
You looked very happy on the horses.
Yesterday.
Yeah, look at you there. Big grand smile out the front.
What advice would Keane give was another text. He's been slagging Fred and the team off since day one. Do you seriously think they were listening to him? Well, I imagine they would have pretended they were anyway.
There was this in the story that was in the papers about him going to give the team talk. It detailed that one player looked completely disinterested, was slouched back in his chair, and Keane apparently lost it.
Well, I would have thought so. It's the kind of man he is.
He actually, he gave a team talk to Munster one time, and Fede Pucciarello thought he was a cyclist and
Roy Keane was a cyclist.
Yeah, we were so embarrassed. We were dying. We nearly beat him when he went out.
What did he say?
He was there like, who is this cyclist? He's from Argentina and just hadn't a clue.
What did he say to you in the team talk?
Oh, he just gave us an incredible chat. And the one thing I'll never forget was he went on about how his body fat was quite high, but he knew he had to be the leader and he had to bring it down to show the way and set the example. And as he said it, in the door came, like, I think something like 30 pizzas that Declan Kidney had organised, and we were all like so embarrassed. We were like, oh no, I can't.
Did you eat the pizza?
No, I think there was one slice taken. Freddy again.
Yeah. Good man, Freddy.
Yeah. But do you know what? I actually think I like that about Keno, and you know I'm a fan anyway, but that he's willing to have a go off the lads, but then walk in the dressing room and stand over it. And
here's another one. Lads, get Craig Doyle on the blower. I want to hear what he has to say about Leinster now after his prediction last week.
Well,
could we organise that?
I think we might be able to organise that. Let's see. Craig Doyle, how are you?
Okay, I got it wrong. Hey, I was surprised though. Hello everyone, how are you?
We're all good. Craig, you are getting a tough time on our WhatsApp group, 51552, just over the Leinster prediction.
Can I explain why, though?
Absolutely.
I'll explain why. I'm a Leinster fan, okay? So I'll have to bite my tongue a lot about Leinster on the telly box. And not, because I get over the other side of the ocean, I get hassled for talking them up all the time, and Munster and Ulster and colleagues. So, you know, it's hard. I'm stuck like on the Isle of Man somewhere when it comes to team bias. I'm just stuck in the middle. But, you know, I've watched Northampton a lot this season, and I watched them at the end of last season. They reached the semi-finals, and I watched them grow under Chris Boyd. And they have found something this season, which means they play absolutely brilliant rugby, at times very Leinster-like rugby, on court, left, right, wide, up the middle, bit of power game too, and I thought, wow, they actually have a game here. But Leinster were just so good. They were just too good for them. They could not keep up. They simply couldn't keep up. And it was interesting that afterwards, kind of Chris Boyd saying, you know, what we can do is we can play at a 9 or a 10. And then we dip down to a 7 or a 6. Let's just come in and they're 8-9 the whole time. They don't back off and we can't cope with that. He did have a little dig at the end though. And this comes around every year, doesn't it? He said, I don't know much about the Pro 14, but what I do know is that the big teams like Leinster and Munster don't play their best players all the time. And this is a reoccurring theme, isn't it? Every time the English clubs get stuffed in Europe, which they did over the weekend again, and the score was 3-1 in Ireland's favour. This comes up that in the Pro 14, the big clubs don't play their big players, whereas in the Premiership, they have to play their big players week in, week out. And there is an awful lot of truth to that in terms of the Premiership.
And you're right. I agreed with you last week. And the perfect example of it, it's Northampton played Leicester, which is a massive grudge game within the whole league. But Doyle, or just this result, 16-43 away from home. Franklin's Gardens is an intimidating place to go. I think we were chatting to Stephen Ferris earlier on. This is an incredible statement to the rest of Europe, isn't it, by Leinster?
It's huge. It's huge because Leinster are currently operating at a different level to everybody else. And I include the Exeter Chiefs in this, who were dodgy. They didn't score in the second half against Sale Sharks. They were lucky to get the win. If it wasn't for a Marlon Yard, absolute howler at the end, they mightn't have got a win there. But they're topping their pool. They're unbeaten. But Leinster are just operating at a completely different level. I love something Leo Kilcullen said last week. He said the World Cup's been quite good for them because they had to play a lot of the young guys in the Pro 14, and they just had to really just give them time and give them confidence, and they settled in really, really well. So it wasn't a case of when are our guys coming back from the World Cup, because certainly up front they handle it really well, and we're seeing all these really good guys, Kelleher coming through and all these lads coming through, and they look completely at home already, don't they, so quickly. So it's just working well for them. They look so good. They're the team of the Championship so far, aren't they?
And the beauty about the back-to-back games is it's only half-time. And we've seen this with Northampton and Leinster. Maybe 6 years ago, Northampton lost at home by 40 points and then turned it around the following week. You just don't feel that's going to happen this time around.
No, you really don't. And it was the comments from Chris Boyd afterwards. It was quite defeatist, I thought, from him, saying, you know, they just have more than us. And he said they looked fitter. And I caught Leinster so much fitter than Northampton. I thought Northampton looked tired near the end, the final quarter. They were really struggling, and I don't think they have enough depth there and enough time to turn things around. And Leinster just look happy. They look like they could just keep on motoring. So I think that's another Leinster win, and I think they're going to be on. I think it's a bonus point win for them next week. I think they're going to be on 19 points. Leinster will be qualified. By the end of next weekend.
Well, if it's half time in these games, the one that's much closer is Munster Saracens, 10-3 last week. That obviously is a return leg with Saracens at home next week. How do you see that one going?
I bet a full range of Ruby Walsh gilets that Owen Farrell starts for Saracens next week, and they throw the kitchen sink at it. So everyone was a bit disappointed. I was too. Like, I really wanted to see how Munster got on against like all the big World Cup stars for England, and Mark McCall, he just didn't play them, and he didn't hide from the fact that he wasn't going to play them. But I thought they were very, very good. So if you look at a club like Saracens, and what they do is they have a very established belief in the way they want to play. So they see themselves as a defensive team. You hear about the Wolfpack all the time, you know, and it's a Wolfpack defence. So if you look at the stats at the end of the Saracens game, you'll see a lot of missed tackles. But they're not always relying on the first guy. I won't bore you with defensive stuff here, but they're not relying on the first guy making the tackle. The first guy might just rush up, slow him down, second guy's going to pound him. And they're so well drilled on this that they absolutely squeeze a team out. And it's kind of what they did to Munster. And even when you bring in essentially half the team being a second string team, they're so well versed on the systems that are ingrained within the club, they just slot in. Now, what you don't get is you don't get the stardust of a Billy or a Mako Carey that'll break the game line and Owen Farrell them and launch play off the back of a line break. And that's what they were missing in Thomond Park on Saturday night. But they had the first bit. They had the foundation, which is that defence and the kicking game, which is kind of scary, isn't it? They can go over and do that to Munster in Thomond Park. The conditions there were dog-awful. I know that because I parked on Donegal Callan's advice. I parked my car in the Castle Troy Hotel and cycled to the ground. And then I had to cycle back in my lovely coat in the rain afterwards. So thanks very much for that. But the conditions were horrible. The second half wasn't for playing rugby. And I was disappointed because the first half, the interplay I thought between Munster and particularly the forwards was absolutely brilliant. And their lovely little pop passes and inside balls. And I thought, oh, something might happen here. But Saracens will be fully loaded next week.
The only thing that happened in the second half was Aaron O'Botha getting sent off. Did you think that was clear cut?
When I saw it, first of all, I thought, that's a bit unfair, because I thought, from where the angle I was at, it looked like he was trying to extend his arm out for a handoff. But actually, when you look at it, see, usually when we see that, you see someone who makes the ball carry, the ball in his arm, and they do that kind of, it's an Islander thing where they almost lift up their arm and they kind of, it's like an uppercut with their elbow or their forearm into the opposition head. And it didn't look like that. It looked like just a badly timed handoff. But actually, when I looked at it closer, I was with Jerry Flannery and Paul Grayson and Paul and David Wallace, and all three of them said, no, that's a nailed on red. And when the guys of that caliber say nailed on red, it's red. It was interesting, though, because the line out steal off, and thank goodness for that, because that could have been a draw. I fancied Saracens scoring off that. So Saracens leaving there with the losing bonus points, denying Munster a try bonus. And I think a lot of us felt Munster might have had a try bonus in them because of the Saracens team. So that's a big one for Saris, and I think they'll fancy it now.
Yeah, and moving on to the Ulster game, an incredible last kick from John Cooney to nearly rob Harlequins at home. And how do you think that'll play out for this week, and what did you make of it?
It was a great win from them, but I didn't think they were brilliant. I've seen them play better this season, and they can't have any. You know, it's been so many tight games. So they've won three games already, right? But the winning margin across the three games is just 7 points. In three games, the winning margin is 7 points. John Cooney, every time, a kick in the first game, that miracle try against Claremont. You remember in the second game when he went, he didn't fancy going around Rackus, he put a little chip ball through and scored a try off it. And then the penalty then again on the weekend. And you just can't do that every single time. You just can't. You've got to start dominating some games. So Paul Gilstart said at the Stoop, he is going to load up his team again. He's not backing off on this. He wants to give it a shot. So it could be difficult for them. I fancy them to win it, but my God, tight affair. They're going to have to sort that out a bit. I was actually up at Ulster. I was up with talking to John Cooney, interviewing him this morning for BT, and he's such a confident fella, you know. He really is, and they've got great belief up there and great team spirit. So they feel like they're on for it. But looking at it, like they're on 12 points, right? So they get something from the Quins game, and then they, they've got Claremont away. They might get anything from that, but then they're going to have Bath in round six, and I fancy them getting 5 points from that up in Belfast. So, you know, 18 points, 19 points will definitely see them out. 18, yeah, maybe, should be enough.
One of the more bizarre incidents of the weekend was Danny Cipriani's crossfield kick. Are you going to tell me he meant it like Dunnock is trying to tell me?
Absolutely.
If he you didn't mean standing, it.
If you, Golden Wrists will tell you, yeah, of course he meant that. There's no... If you haven't seen it, you've got to jump onto YouTube. Within an hour of the match finishing, 30,000 people have watched the clip. So basically, there's a ball out to Danny Cipriani in their own 22. And I think he tried to put a little outside of the boot, kind of kick pass into the corner, a diagonal cross kick in. And I think he scuffed it along the ground because it was the equivalent of a defender passing the ball across the front of his goal in football. I mean, it was a crazy thing to do. What do you think?
I thought it was. And I tell you what's worse. The next pass was forward as well.
he won't leave this forward pass go. I was there. Look at this for a bit of skill, Ruby. He was there. Don't worry about that. What about the forward pass?
I'd love you to be a referee, Ruby.
I'd be the TMO.
I'd love to see him in shorts. I'd kill for it. We have to chat about Rog. La Rochelle, a disappointing loss at home, 24-27 to the Glasgow Warriors. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I was really surprised. They don't lose there very often, but they're in a funny place, all La Rochelle, aren't they? And they just don't look very interested in the competition this year. In saying that, credit to Glasgow, because not many go over there and get a win like that. And you know, they were 18-6 down at halftime, Glasgow, away from home in La Rochelle, to come back and win that one, 27-24, I think was massive. I was really impressed with Adam Hastings. The older listeners amongst you all will know his dad, Gavin. He was a fine fullback for Scotland. Although, do you remember the kick he missed? You have to always mention the kick he missed in the World Cup under the sticks to win. I think it was a quarter-final game, was it?
Yeah.
You have to mention, every time you mention Gavin Hastings, you have to mention that. But his son, Adam, was outstanding. He really mixed up the game really nicely because Finn Russell, of course, moved off to Racing and he had to fill those boots. And he looks really, really good. And he set up the try for Kyle Steyn. And it was a really nice move. And I think Glasgow are now at 8 points in that pool. And they've really given themselves a shot. Round three is great because a win like that and a loss somewhere else in the pool, and suddenly everything you thought was going to happen, the whole narrative completely shifts. And La Rochelle are going to go to Glasgow this weekend. It's going to be lashing rain and windy. They're not going to be remotely interested. Glasgow will get a win there, might even get 5 points, could be on 12, 13 points end of the weekend. And then Sale Sharks against Glasgow in the final round could be a really interesting one, because Exeter are going to win this pool, and they're going to win it comfortably on 14 points. So that's a really interesting battle. I mean, what the stuff we start talking about now is, you know, you've got five pools, the winner of each pool goes through, and then the best three runners up. And what pools are the runners up going to come from? And I think it's going to be trickier this year than normal.
Yeah, absolutely. Craig, thanks so much for joining us.
No worries at all.
Craig on BT Sport all this weekend. We're going to take a break.
Game on. WhatsApp 087 187
9200. My sporting highlight was Liverpool's 3-0 win against Bournemouth to stay 8 points ahead of the top of the Premier League.
My highlight of the week was Liverpool's 3-0 win, 8 points clear. Come on, the Red Men!
Who's that?
Sounds very familiar, all right.
That's Timmy, that's your little boy, isn't it?
I come to work for a break and they found me.
I mean, I can't believe you've ruined their minds as well.
Do you know what's brilliant about that, Marie? You heard that through the soundproof window, didn't you?
I heard a kid's voice and straight away I knew it was him. My head turned automatically.
Moms.
I'd say she heard it through the headphones. I turned to see where he was myself, but maybe not.
Well, I know they're listening anyway.
Yeah, they absolutely
are. It's 10 minutes to bedtime, lads.
Can you get? And if you want to reply to that, 087 187 9200.
Now, guys, the GAA is back.
Way!
It's been back for a couple of weeks now, but it was really back at the weekend because the O'Byrne Cup was on, and I like the O'Byrne Cup, and maybe Austin O'Malley does too. He joins us on the phone, former Wicklow and Mayo footballer. Austin, how are you?
Brilliant, super, yeah, absolutely buzzing. Great to see it all back and kicking off again, and a couple of interesting games obviously there the weekend with a number of, I suppose, new managers coming into the fold there, so we got our first sort of visual on those guys.
They all lost though. Well,
did,
Paul
yeah.
Galvin lost with Wexford, Jack O'Connor lost with Kildare, Davy Burke lost with Wicklow, and Mike Quirk lost with Laois.
They did, yeah, yeah. I suppose from an incoming manager or even a new coach, you'd always like to be getting off particularly on the front foot, I suppose, and getting a win. But I don't think any of them will be overly concerned. Plenty of green shoots there with regard to some of the performances and that. So I suppose this time of year, really, it's just about collectively getting guys together. There won't have been a whole pile of work done in terms of embedding in a new philosophy or a game plan. So I suppose really what you're looking for from your squad really is that guys are coming in with those what we call probably observable winning behaviours, that the attitude and the mindset is right, and guys are stepping up again to apply themselves, and they're trying to build a bit of a team spirit. And once you see that kind of cohesion early on, well, you know, there's plenty of time to bed stuff in. But yes, of course, they'd have loved to have got off on a winning note, but unfortunately not for them this weekend.
Obviously, Austin, the team are looking for that to, you know, build a bond. But what are the players looking at this time of the year? You know, it's pre-season and start of games.
Yeah, I think, I suppose, from a player's perspective, you're always looking to that your setup has improved from the previous year, and I suppose from a management and a backroom team that you're adding little bits and pieces to build, I suppose, a stronger environment, and that you're also probably looking at yourself in terms of your own sort of performance plan, that you start adding little bits and pieces to it as well. But also, I suppose, you're just looking for around the dressing room and to see the energy of other guys and to get back into harness again. And you know, if you can manage to get those things, well then it's very, very enjoyable from a player's perspective this time of year also.
Colin Bonner came out, the Carlo hurling manager, and said that this isn't the time of year that players should be playing matches, that they should just be doing their conditioning. Would you agree, Austin?
Yeah, of course, because I suppose the season is so long that this block really is all about your conditioning, I suppose, your mental conditioning and your physical conditioning. And sometimes games can be a bit of a distraction in that you're not going to be tapering, obviously, to get a performance. But still, if you're a young guy coming in, you want to be fresh going into games and so on. So maybe you are, you know, maybe you are considering that because you want to make it onto a panel and so on. But realistically, it's all about pre-season. You've got to hit the numbers in pre-season, because once the season kicks off, you know, you have got to start deloading and getting fresh. And the National League is coming around the corner, and there will be a reduced load in terms of strength and conditioning and that as well. So this really is the opportune moment to hit those numbers and get a lot of capacity in terms of your training and that.
Austin, can any player make that big an impression at a match at this time of year that's going to propel him onto a team later in the season?
I don't think so in terms of he's going to make a massive impact, but from a manager's perspective, the things you will be looking at is his attitude, his mindset, his application, his willingness to sacrifice himself maybe for the team. You might ask him to do a role that maybe traditionally in his club that he mightn't have been doing. But you're looking for those, as I said previously, those observable winning behaviours. Has this guy got the stuff, you know? And that's what managers will be looking. I'm sure Jack O'Connor and Paul Galvin and these guys, this is what they will be looking for this time of year.
Observable winning behaviours. Do you ever see them in rugby, Donica?
Yeah, I've seen a few of them. Austin, I need you to bail me out here. Can you leave Ruby know that you actually saw me going into the gym? Because he's giving me a hard time that I have an arse like Ken Boy.
I know. I said no such thing. I meant your gut.
But I think it's all those mince pies you're hoovering up around Donnybrook. I can't get any of them. Donnybrook Fair is sold out there.
They had
Ruby, just for the record, I did meet him in the gym last Tuesday morning, so he's doing a bit.
Good. There was a mince pie tasting competition here last week, and funnily enough, who was the judge?
That's my life now, Austin, eating mince pies.
That's where it's gone to. What's your look? I mean, it could be worse.
Yeah, rude.
Austin, Ruby didn't enjoy the Leinster football final, I reckon, anyway, going by his tone. Ballyboden beat Airogue in a dramatic finish.
I said no such thing.
You inferred it.
I did not. You assumed I was going to infer it.
Sorry about this, Austin.
We've a guest.
So, Austin, Ballyboden, strong finish, unlucky for Airogue in the end, really.
Yeah, look, Airogue have been fantastic in the quality of football that they've played up to this point, but I witnessed Ballyboden early on in the year in a league game up here just in Dublin, and even that evening, I thought they were fierce, impressive, you know. I thought Ryan Baskill and these guys, the way they moved the ball, that particular evening I was watching them play in a club game, and they just cut the opposition to shreds inside about it. They got a 10 or 12 minute period, and I just thought, wow, they looked very, very impressive. They looked actually the stamp of an inter-county team. So I think they're going to go a long way in this campaign. I would not be surprised if they were thereabouts come Paddy's Day or the final of it, you know.
And just finally and very quickly, Kieran McDonald back in with Mayo. Good move?
Ah, super move. It's a positive news story down in Mayo at the moment. I suppose there's a lot of negative spin around the county at the moment. And this really is, I think, the wise move by James Horden. I suppose he's bringing him in to bolster his backroom team, and I suppose, you know, there will be certainly he'll be looking at to ignite that forward division or to bring in. He's a wonderful young coach. I've seen him up close and personal in the academy set up, and he's a guy that holds people's attention, and he's a deep, deep understanding of the game and the requirements of the game at this particular time.
Thanks, Austin. Appreciate you joining us. Yeah. Now, there was some news this evening that former Republic of Ireland international Darrell Murphy revealed that he secretly served an FA ban for taking cocaine on a night out. Daniel Taylor of The Athletic had this story this evening, and Daniel joins us on the line. Daniel, how did this story come to light?
Well, I heard about it a while back. It's not something that has been in the last few days. And to be honest, I think my initial reaction was probably the same as everybody else is, really, because obviously Darrell, you know, kind of always seen as you know, great professional, you know, and I wouldn't really say one incident takes that away forever, but obviously this does tarnish perhaps how, you know, that otherwise unblemished sort of record he has. You know, he's played for a lot of clubs. He's always, you know, I think when he retired from the Irish team, Martin O'Neill sort of praised him for his professionalism. And but obviously there was this incident, it was last season, and he, you know, he's held his hands up and he's put a statement out via The Athletic, basically saying that it was a night out and he made a bad decision. And obviously in this day and age, I mean, you know, you can call it a bad decision, other people would call it perhaps something slightly stronger when, you know, so many drug tests and, you know, how he thought he, I'm not too sure. So, yeah, you know, a really, really bad decision. And he actually served 6 weeks suspension, but it never came out at the time because the Football Association here has a policy which is that for anyone failing a drugs test, the FA keep it secret, which is basically, fundamentally, because most of the time it's young players, it's players of 16, 17, and they want to protect them when they've got their whole career ahead of themselves.
But is that right or wrong, Danny? Should they be protected 16, 17, 18? Is that not sort of saying we kind of accept this, we're going to give you a second chance? Should they not be standing on it?
I can see both views, to be fair. I mean, one of the other considerations is that they also say that sometimes for a player to have taken recreational drugs, it can point to, you know, them having personal difficulties in their life. in this case, that, you know, obviously, you know, I've been speaking to Bolton Wanderers and Darrell Murphy indirectly through Bolton, and Darrell Murphy's basically said that there aren't any other mitigating, so, you know, the circumstances along those lines. So it just sounds, it just basically like a night out where he was tempted to basically take some cocaine, and obviously, as a professional footballer, or a professional sportsman, that is an owner, you know. And I mean, at that time, the irony being that he was actually in really good form and in his team, but obviously he missed a couple of months. I think the suspension was 6 weeks, but he was out of the team for 2 months. And obviously, yeah, it's so kind of unprofessional. But yet we're talking about someone whose sort of reputation is for great professionalism. So that's the dynamic. I can, with the FA, I can see both sides. You know, I certainly wouldn't say you're wrong. You know, in terms of if you think that, you know, the players should be named, they're named. If they have a fight outside a chip shop on a Friday night and get arrested, they're named. So it just seems slightly strange that there's this kind of blanket policy, you know, to protect the players. And obviously Darrell Murphy, you know, he's 36 now, you know, at the end of a very long career. As I say, he hasn't offered any kind of mitigating circumstances other than what I've already said, that it was just a night out and he fancied doing some cocaine for whatever reason.
Thanks, Daniel. We really appreciate you taking the call, and I think this is something we might end up talking about a bit more tomorrow, but that's all we have time for tonight. Tara Stewart is up next.
Game on 2FM. Weekdays from 6.